Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. I'm really pleased today. My guest is Timothy Bennett. Timothy is the Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Drummond Group. For over 20 years, the Drummond Group has helped clients achieve interoperability, certification, compliance, and security. Drummond is an authorized certification body and an accredited test lab within the Office of the National Coordinator Health IT Certification Program. Timothy, welcome to the Tate Chronicles.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, Jim. You know, you and I go way back and to, you know, some of the early days of the ONC and Meaningful Use program days. So it's good to catch up again and talk about what's going on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation, Timothy. You know, I'm laughing because it seems like we're always looking for further clarification from the government on all these programs. So, whether it was an interim final rules or final rules or adjustment to the final rules, or we're expecting more clarification on real world testing or something else, we're always kind of waiting. But we'll get into the details in a little bit on that. I know you're leading Drummond's newest program, which is the Payer and Patient Access Certification Fire Program. Tell us a little bit about what the purpose of that program is and what problems does it address?
Yeah, so last, I guess it was March of 2020, was a big day when both ONC and CMS announced new final rules. For ONC, it was the Cures final rule. Mm-hmm. CMS had their own final rule, their Patient Access and Interoperability final rule. And, you know, in both of those final rules were, in the case of ONC, you know, they were making regulatory requirements for EHRs to support, you know, FHIR API, you know, technology for, you know, access to, you know, patients access to their data. Also for population services with bulk data. CMS did likewise, but, you know, theirs were more sort of recommendations instead of, you know, hard requirements in terms of the FHIR requirements. But they definitely were signaling, you know, in the payer community, health plans that are part of Medicare and Medicaid health plans, you know, were likewise going to need to expose patient information as well. That's part of their patient access. But, you know, unlike the ONC with their, you know, long-running testing and certification programs as part of, you know, their health IT regulatory requirements, CMS chose not to establish their own testing and certification programs. Instead, you know, they're just writing these final rules, you know, making recommendations, calling out FHIR implementation guides and FHIR specs and standards on how to, you know, how payers should be exposing patient data, both clinical and their EOB claims data, also making provider directory information available through FHIR APIs and, you know, drug formularies so that, you know, patients and members can, you know, do some, essentially do some drug shopping, you know, via mobile apps. But, you know, they decided not to do, you know, their own test and certification program. And so that sort of left the market there, especially in the payer community, without some, you know, really, you know, say what you will about ONC, at least for the most part, you know, when it comes to their final rules, you know, they go to some fairly great lengths to explain, you know, what the requirements are, what the, you know, what it means to be compliant or not. I mean, you were sort of joking at the beginning of our conversation where, you know, we're always looking for clarification and whatnot. But looking for clarification from CMS on their final rules is a whole different, you know, animal here, Jim, because, you know, they just chose not to set up the infrastructure that CMS did. And so there was really a, you know, a lot of confusion as to what it really means to be compliant to these final rule recommendations around FHIR APIs for the payer community. So Drummond decided, you know, we decided that, you know, given our long, you know, history with doing testing and certification for ONC and, you know, our understanding of the regs and, you know, what we've been doing with, you know, ONC's API testing for a while now, that, you know, we felt like, you know, we would step up and sort of help bring some clarity to the payer market and what it means to be compliant to the final rule. And that's, you know, that's the journey that we embarked on sort of at the beginning of the year. And, you know, it's going to be a long journey, but we're excited to be on it. We feel like we're the right people to do it. And, you know, I'll explain a little bit more. I mean, it's not just about Drummond Group saying what's going to be compliant or not. You know, I can talk about a little bit more of the specifics of our testing and certification program and how it functions and works and what the governance of it is going to look like and all of that. But we really felt the market needed, one, a testing and certification program, because, as you know, Jim, it's almost impossible to get interoperability anyway. And it, and if you don't have, you know, sort of a single source of truth of what it means to be compliant, and if everyone is free to sort of say I'm compliant without any sort of third party accountability to that, you know, it's just not a recipe for long term success there, and it hurts consumers and it frustrates implementers as well, I think.
You know, one of the things, Timothy, let's just talk about the FHIR standard itself a little bit. The whole move towards interoperability. It's kind of like, it's hard to come up with a good description, but we think we know what it is when we see it or when we don't see it. And so often we think about the exchange of data for the purposes of direct patient care, maybe from referring a provider to a specialist or from a provider to a hospital or emergency room, moving data around that way. And that I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, one way to look at this is there's some relatively crude ways to move around big chunks of patient data on an individual patient. But FHIR allows much more detailed and granular pieces of that data to be requested and transmitted and received. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, and I think it is, and I think certainly, I mean, FHIR isn't without its, you know, its own challenges, and like, you know, I mean, moving exchange of patient data is a hard thing anyway, right? Because there's a lot of factors that goes into it, privacy and consent and
culture,
and so much other things. I mean, it's just, I mean, there's a lot of different you know, aspects to healthcare data, but. But, you know, I do think, you know, some of the methods that have been employed here in the past are, you know, they're clunky and there's a lot of data, like you said. I think one of the things that FHIR brings to the table is that it allows consumers of data, you know, to just ask and get what they want, you know, instead of having, you know, sort of the whole kitchen sink. Now, you know, some folks would say, you know, these FHIR resources are pretty big, too, and complicated. But at least, you know, it affords RESTful API technology, which is a very well-known, you know, transport infrastructure. You know, the whole internet basically runs off of REST APIs for the most part, certainly mobile devices as well. But just the ability, you know, if you're a specialist and you're being a patient referred to you, you know, you don't necessarily need to know everything there is about the patient, you know, for, you know, what you might be treating them. You can just get the data that you need and go with it. And I think that will simplify, you know, some of the data exchange requirements. I do.
Now, you know, one thing that kind of sticks out to me, Timothy, just the name of your FHIR program, payer and patient access. We normally think of just clinician to clinician exchange of data, but those payers, they need access to medication list and diagnoses list and all that kind of stuff. So perhaps a lot of people who are very, very close to this realize that automatically, but that's almost maybe a new context for those of us who are just very close to the actual delivery of healthcare, not the reimbursement. But those payers need and can benefit from FHIR capability also.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, the things that CMS is putting forth in their final rules kind of points to that, signals that. I mean, they're obviously very big on you know, giving member in the payer community, patients are sort of called members, right? The members right. of these health plans, giving members, you know, greater access to, you know, to their health information, just like on the ONC side, we've seen that with, you know, requiring the EHRs to do that as well through portals and APIs. And but I think the key point here, I think that some folks may not be picking up on is, you know, as from a national standpoint, as we sort of grapple and the federal government also grapples with, you know, how do we improve interoperability? How does patient, you know, data get exchanged better? You know, not only for patient outcomes, to improve those patient outcomes, but also just improve the patient experience themselves if they have to, you know, bounce around to different providers and whatnot. I think what we're seeing here is that CMS views themselves, and I would understand ONC and other, you know, parts of HHS and other government agencies that's part of that, is that there's a view that a patient's data from a sort of centralized standpoint might be better viewed as residing with their payer as opposed to with their kind of siloed with their provider. Mm-hmm. The idea being that, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of insurer that a patient has, every time that they encounter the healthcare system, it's going to go through some payer, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, or some, you know, other, you know, private insurance.
Sure.
It's going to be going through that. That's the one thing that a patient's data is always going to sort of go through. And perhaps instead of looking at the equation from how do we sort of share all of this data between the provider, that perhaps the payer is sort of in the central part of the equation. And so I think the patient access final rule is sort of looking at that, where not only is it requiring payers to, you know, make their claims data available through APIs to a patient. I mean, we've gotten EOBs, you know, emailed to us, you know, for a long time now, but now opening that up to, you know, being able to access that through a marketplace of mobile apps is kind of where we're going here. But not just the EOB, not just the claims data, but also the clinical data that you would normally sort of see from the provider. And that's signaling that there down the road, there's going to be a lot more exchange between provider and payer in terms of clinical data, not just, you know, the billing part of, you know, of the equation.
Sure.
And it also opens up a lot more price transparency provisions as well, you know, which is, you know, a big complaint in the healthcare industry here, is that, you know, the patient doesn't normally have a really good feel for how much this, you know, procedure is going to cost me. And this is where I think we're going with some of these APIs that CMS is bringing down the road.
For those in our audience who are just joining us in this episode of Tate Chronicles, I'm speaking today to Timothy Bennett of the Drummond Group. You know, one thing that you mentioned there, Timothy, is the whole concept of the payer side of things. But let's kind of go back to the ONC certification process for just a minute. There's a deadline for the fire standard. I believe it's criteria G10 that is going to be part of the regulations coming up. I believe the deadline is the end of 2022. And so how is your fire certification program different from the certification requirements of the G10 criteria?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. But I'll, you know, the short answer is there's a lot of overlap here, Jim. And here's another thing that folks might sort of miss a little bit is, you know, we all always, at least in my line of the business, we're always looking at ONC as being sort of the, you know, leading the spearhead of health IT requirements and pushing the envelope along. And they are. But it's interesting to me that in the case here of using fire APIs and patient access, CMS actually took the lead. And, you know, this past July 1st was the, you know, the deadline for payers to have patient data available through, you know, APIs. And so they're, you know, ahead in terms of regulatory deadlines to ONC. So with, you know, with the ONC G10 criteria, you know, that's requiring EHRs to make patient clinical data, you know, available to them through APIs. On the payer side, they also have that same requirement for the clinical data, but there's some other provisions as well on the payer side. So at Drummond, we sort of look at these two different, you know, certification programs. The one we've had in place for a long time on the EHR side with ONC, that G10 now becomes part of it. But with this new one on the CMS, we just see two complementary programs for two different markets, right? One is the EHR technology, the other is the payer community. But some of the requirements are the same, and certainly, you know, CMS and ONC, where they overlap, you know, with the smart on fire technology in particular, you know, they would like for, you know, implementers to, you know, to implement the same, you know, specifications on that, so that, you know, it enhances the chances of interoperability and all that. So we see it as complementary programs. And I think as time goes on, Jim, you're going to see a lot more overlap with that, because, you know, the things that are coming down the road from CMS that they've signaled are using FHIR-based technology to support quality measure reporting, mm-hmm. and also FHIR technology to support sort of the next generation of prior authorization to really reduce the burden reduction for providers. And so at the same time, I think though, while those CMS rules will really only apply to the payers, but once those infrastructures are set up, the provider community and the EHR community will be in line to take advantage of that. So, you know, once payers are able to accept prior authorizations and provide, you know, documentation requirements for prior authorization via FHIR, you know, technology, you can bet providers are going to be asking their EHR vendors to, I want that, you know, I want that implementation, that seamless implementation into my EHR, so that I can cut all of this time down that it takes me to do a prior authorization. So I think as time goes on and these, you know, FHIR APIs become more prevalent on both sides of the houses, so to speak, between CMS mm-hmm. and ONC, I think we're going to see how they overlap. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, down the road that ONC expands some of their, you know, regulation, you know, in this area. But I get, you know, that remains to be seen. That's just me speculating.
Well, let me, Timothy, ask you to put on your historian hat for just a minute. You've been in the field of healthcare technology for quite some time, like myself. And so we have seen, before the whole meaningful use federal stimulation, really a cash financial infusions to help hospitals and providers buy EHRs and kind of boost up the percentage of people or providers that way using EHRs. That was certainly necessary. And that was like in the early days of this trajectory of electronic health information, hopefully at some point becoming more and more interoperable. Where are we in that trajectory? You know, those first couple of years, it seems like maybe we were going up pretty fast. Now it seems like incremental steps are being made. I mean, where are we going to be 5 years from now? Any idea? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, in my opinion, the next 5 years is really going to be building out FHIR infrastructures in various different elements. So I think it'll take a while for, you know, the payoff to be there, because it's sort of like, you know, if I can talk about these FHIR infrastructures sort of in terms of bridges and roads and, you know, some of our physical infrastructure that we deal with, you know, sometimes you just have to have these long construction projects and then finally, you know, when it's sort of built, then you can really, you know, get going. And so I think, you know, over the next few years, there's going to be a building out of the necessary infrastructures that's going to, you know, to really support the greater interoperability that FHIR promises. And so I think there's a little bit of patience involved. Of course, everyone's going to say, well, you know, we've heard this story before, and it's, you know, it's the same old story that's been going on for years and years about, you know, interoperability. But I think there's a lot of promise for FHIR, but, you know, it is going to take, you know, a lot of the, you know, different aspects of the healthcare ecosystem to really, you know, buy into it. And I think it's going to take government regulation to help, you know, make it happen, because it's not going to be cheap. You know, it costs money for, you know, folks to implement some of these infrastructures. But I think the payoff could be really, really big.
You know, analogy you used, Timothy, about roads and bridges, I find that really appropriate because in the 1950s, when President Eisenhower decided to build interstates all over the United States, they didn't immediately say, okay, who's going to build all the gas stations at every exit ramp? But somebody stood up and said, I'm going to build gas stations. A bunch of companies said, we're going to build gas stations along these interstates. And we're kind of having that same thing with electric vehicles. You know, who's stepping up to put all these charging stations up? You know, it's being done, even though it wasn't part of an overall plan. It was just this need. Maybe that's what we'll see with fire, kind of like what you're talking about, all these ancillary types of development and projects and initiatives.
Yeah, I think for sure. But, you know, getting the infrastructure in place to support that is, you know, some of the first steps, you know, especially, you know, with the transaction rates that, you know, that will be needed, you know, for some of these projects. I mean, you know, prior authorization alone, you know, I don't have statistics at my fingertips for how many prior authorization transactions happen in the U.S. every day, but it's, you know, it's you know, in the multi millions, I'm sure. So, you know, being able to support a fire infrastructure that can handle that. I mean, there's infrastructure that has to be in place, and there's projects ongoing like the FAST project that talks about, you know, having core facilities to support fire scale and then some other things that are going on to help support that. You know, you got to have those things in there to be able to, you know, run down the road. But sure. For now, I think we're still crawling and trying to figure out where we want to go with it all.
Well, Timothy, it's kind of hard to believe, but we're almost out of time. Before we run out of time, for our listeners who are interested in Drummond's services and especially their newest program that you're leading, the Payer and Patient Access Certification Fire Program, what's the best way for people to find out about Drummond or get in contact with Drummond?
Yeah, well, you know, anyone can always email me. It's real, my email is very simple, timothy@drummondgroup.com. And I think, you know, we certainly have a website, drummondgroup.com, as well, that you can go to and find out all kinds of information about all of our testing programs. I'll probably provide you a few links here, Jim, that, you okay. know, maybe you can include on the podcast notes.
Absolutely.
You know, to get directly to some things. But I'll just say, you know, we're very excited about what we're doing around fire and testing and certification at Drummond. You know, we partnered with Aegis.net with their Touchstone fire testing platform. It's a very robust platform for testing all kinds of different, you know, fire IGs and implementation guides. And, you know, we're starting out with some of these first things with CMS and, of course, our G10 testing with the ONC. But there's so much fire IGs down the road. And, you know, we're setting ourselves up to provide our customers with a way that they can, you know, have the tools and the resources they need to, you know, implement compliant, you know, fire implementations, not just now for what's required, but for the things that are coming down the road. So I appreciate the opportunity, Jim, to come on and talk about it for a few minutes.
Well, Timothy, thank you. And to our audience, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Take Chronicles. And, of course, I offer a special salute to my guest today, Timothy Bennett of the Drummond Group. Timothy, thanks for coming aboard today.
Yep, my pleasure.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tape Chronicles transmission ending now.